effort is what matters, because when this is all said and done, your kid's going to go to college and your kid's going to have a job. And it's about what the effort they put in, day out, not the outcome. They have to learn how to deal with the outcome when it doesn't go their way.
Welcome to the Generation Youth Podcast, where we ignite the future by empowering our youth. I'm James McLamb, your host, founder, and CEO of Generation Youth, and the author of the best-selling book, Tomorrow's Youth. Whether you're a parent, an educator, youth pastor, or coach, join us as we dive into the pressing issues facing our young people today. Together, we'll unlock the strategies, insights, and inspiration to elevate and equip our next generation. Stay with us, and let's make a difference, one youth at a time. Welcome to another episode of the Generation Youth Podcast. I'm James McLamb, and I'm here with my friend Leah, that we had just connected in the last couple of months, and I'm really excited for our time together. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, James. Great to be here.
Well, Leah, our guest, always in love, would rather hear about you from you than hear James talk, and they would rather me just shut up and listen to our guests. So if you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself to the Generation Youth community.
Hi, everyone. My name is Leah Jansen. I live in New York, and I am a mental performance coach. I work with student athletes. I also work with adults, but primarily I work with student athletes. I am a high school guidance counselor as well, and spend a lot of time working with teenagers every day. And then after school, I have an amazing job as the mental health and performance coach for student athletes in my school district. So I meet with every single varsity team. We go over a lot of mental performance tips and strategies on how to, you know, perform at their best while balancing their life, which is schoolwork and courses and college and recruiting and all of those things. So I have that wonderful privilege of doing that as well. And then I work privately with athletes all over the country. And in fact, I have an athlete overseas. I'm working with a kid from Ireland, which is super fun and cool. So I'm really excited to spread my wings international. So that's a quick thing about me, James. I'm the mother of four children, also all athletes. And I happen to be an elite endurance athlete myself, traveling to Kona, Hawaii to participate in the Ironman World Championships. And I've done 5 Boston Marathons. So I am with the kids. I'm also training and working hard. So I kind of know what that is firsthand, as well as being a parent of athletes, and I get to work with athletes. So I'm surrounded by athletes all day long, which honestly is really a dream.
When someone is hearing you give that description and they say, hey, she's a performance coach for athletes after school, why do they need this? Don't we have, you know, teachers working with them? Don't we have their athletic coaches with them? And she's a counselor. Isn't she working with them in that aspect? Why do we need another layer of this kind of help with youth? Why?
That's a great question, James, honestly. And I've been on a lot of podcasts and I've never been asked that question. So I'm going to address that in a few ways. First of all, the kids today are under more stress and pressure than we ever were back in our day. The demands of these student athletes are increased. Their time, social media, everything is highlighted. Everything is on display. Everything is more is better. So in addition to practices they have after school, they have private sessions, they have club and travel teams that they participate in, and their sports are year round. Back when I played sports, you played one season and then you moved on to the next season and you weren't going from lacrosse practice to soccer practice and then basketball camp. I mean, it's intense what these student athletes are going under. And truthfully, coaches, first of all, most coaches are not trained in mental performance. They're just not. They're X's and O's, not all of them. And some of them are very skilled at the mental game, but don't have the time to really dedicate to mental performance. So I see myself as another avenue for them. Hey, listen, I tell my coaches, use me to help you. I'm here to support you. Let me take the team for an hour while you're, you know, prepping the film. You know, they'll usually tie in a meeting with me and with film work. Like, okay, it's a rainy day, we'll meet with Coach Leah and then we'll watch film. So it's a way for them it's one less thing they have to worry about. I can take on some of that mental performance pieces so that they can focus on other things. And then they reinforce the work I'm doing. Everything I say to the kids is stuff that the coaches typically say. It also is great to hear it from another person. The coaches say, yeah, Leah, I teach this, I touch on it, but you're reinforcing it, you're saying it in a different way, and you're giving me some freedom to do other things. So you're helping me. So those are a couple of reasons, James, why I feel that the mental performance piece, yeah, the kids do have a lot, and I work with them during the school day on, really, it's all about learning how to overcome adversity, how to deal with a challenging situation. These are life skills. These are life skills, James, wrapped in a sports package is how I kind of look at it. And the things I teach them, you know, with the teams, I'm teaching the same thing to my own children and to my students in as a guidance counselor. So it's all the same stuff, right? I just use sports as a back door, so to speak. Like, oh, she gets it. She gets what we're doing. And they listen to me. But meanwhile, it's all adversity, challenges, picking yourself up after a tough situation, learning how to recover from a mistake. These are things, you know, one day, one game doesn't define you. Neither does one chemistry test. Like, it's the same concept. So I like to look at it as more of a mental resilience and just a belief that, you know what? Okay, that wasn't my day. Tomorrow's a new day and I can start anew and keep working hard. And just that's sort of my message.
I like what you said when you talked about coaches, maybe not trained, but maybe they just don't have the time. And that goes the same for teachers. You know, I was in the classroom, the last time I was in the classroom was over 20 years ago. And it's changed so much. I had the bandwidth in the almost decade I was in the classroom to spend some of my day teaching them some of these life skills, being able to do those things. And I believe every teacher and coach wants to do that. That's why they go into it. I met very few teachers that go into teaching high school or middle school because they're really, really passionate about math or English.
Right.
I've very rarely met anyone in that way. What I've met is those who are passionate about helping, and they tie it with what they were naturally drawn to. What their interest was. I was interested in history. I can use that as a vehicle to make a difference.
Right.
That's what I would hear. And so I love that you said they don't have the time, because I don't want our audience to hear this and say, we don't need this kind of coaching aspect, this life coaching stuff. You know, we got teachers and coaches doing it. It's a different world.
It's a different world.
And what's required on them is so much more.
To piggyback on what you're saying, you're 100% right. Everything is more. Teachers today have more demands, right? Now, when you taught probably 20 years ago, you didn't go home to 50 emails from kids and parents. And it's so that there's no off switch for anybody anymore. So for teachers to have the luxury to spend a period of their day talking about, you know, mental resilience and getting over, they love to, and they do touch on it, but honestly, they don't have the time they wish they had. They're prepping for exams. The kids have to be ready for the state exams and the AP exams and all of the things. And the pressure's on them for their kids to produce good scores and good grades. And that's a lot of pressure on teachers, but they do want to connect with the kids. And that's why whenever teachers see me, they're like, this is great, Leah. I'm so glad you're touching on this stuff. They want me to create a course. They're like, I wish there was a class for kids on this, on just the fundamentals of thinking and how to approach it, because it's something that's lacking in a lot of the curriculum. And coaches as well, they love it, but they're under pressure also to win and to produce these recruits. And it's a lot of demands on people. Everyone's feeling that pressure, and the anxiety that goes along with it is we need to balance it out a little bit. We need to have the other side, like, okay, who's dealing with the fallout from all the anxiety and the stress and the pressure? And I'm trying to send the message, it's okay. It's okay if you don't get into that college, your first choice. It's okay if your SAT score isn't what you thought it was going to be. It's what you make of where you are. It's what you do with what you have. You know, and that's a hard message, because kids are all or nothing. If I don't get into this school, my life is over. If I don't get recruited by a D1 school, I'm going to be embarrassed. And I'm not, all of these years of my parents driving me all over for camps and recruitments and tournaments. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on the kids. They see what's going on, and they want to perform for everybody. They feel that almost external pressure. When I try and tell them internally, what makes it important is how you feel about it. You put your best foot forward, everything will work out in the end. And that's I'm going against the grain on that message, really, for sure. And it's a hard one to send. Yeah.
So what are you doing? What's the process? of working with these? So got a parent that's listening and say, okay, you've piqued my interest, but what's my kid going to be doing? You know, is it just going to be someone else demanding their time? What's the process here?
That's a great question. I had a couple of athletes reach out to me the other day, and the parent will reach out and say, hey, my kid is I have a new athlete, a ninth grade softball player. We moved from another school. She knows how her confidence is just lacking. She's making mistakes that she normally doesn't make. Can you talk to her? Great. So the parent reached out to me and I say, let's set up a call. I'll meet with her one-on-one to see if it's a good fit for her, because it may not be. The kid might not be ready for that. You have to be at a place in your life where you want to spend time talking to a mental performance coach. It, you know, the kid's initial thought is, there's something wrong with me. Like, why is my dad hiring a mental performance coach? And it's just to give them some skills and strategies and tips that they can use. So I'll meet with the kid and they love it. It's a space for them to talk about what's going on with them, not to a parent, not to a coach. I'm objective. I'm that third party safe place. And I tell the kids, you can share whatever you want with me. This is about you and your sport. There's no judgment here. I'm going to give you some, okay, if you're nervous out there, let's talk about what happens before your game. What's going on when you get nervous? Let's do more of what's working and less of what's not. Oh, you know what helps me is when I spend time alone listening to my music before the game. Okay, great. Let's do that. Let's put that on your pregame routine. Again, it gives them some structure to what they're doing, as opposed to just going out there and winging it. Well, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'll just see what... That doesn't feel good. When you go into the grocery store, James, do you go in with no list? Or what happens when you go in with nothing? You walk out with a bunch of stuff, like, I've got Triscuits in one hand and Twinkies
I'm probably not the best person to ask that question. I never go in with a list.
I know. But the point is, if you go in with no list and you don't know what you're doing, how are you possibly going to execute on what you need?
Now, related to that, my wife will go with me then. I'm not sending you by your... I said, I need to go to the grocery store. I'm going with you to help guide you on what you need to do. So there may be an analogy there. That I'm the kid who doesn't know what to do, and she's the coach.
You need a coach with you. You need a grocery store coach. Yeah, you can't be left with your own device.
We just created a whole new line of coaching there. Grocery store coaching.
We need a whole new coach. Contact me if you're interested in grocery store coaching. But that's kind of the point. It's a little bit of a guide. It's where they can talk about things and process them out loud. And I've yet to have a kid meet with me one-on-one that didn't go ahead and decide to do it. They just enjoy it. And I know how to talk to teenagers. I've been doing it for 25 years. And I think I can say the things that, you know, they're like, oh yeah, that happens and that happens and this happens. So they feel, you know, I get feedback from the parents. She loved it. She can't wait to talk to you. It gives her something, you know, it's 30 minutes once a week. It's not a lot of time. You have a lot of demands on their time, James. I agree. But if it's 30 minutes of, you know, you do all the physical reps every day, you go to practice, you warm up the arm, you throw, you catch, you hit. But are you doing the mental reps? Like, are you really putting the time in on? If every kid, I ask the kids when I do a presentation, how many of you in this room thinks the mental game is 50% of your performance? Keep your hands raised if it's 60, 70, 80, 90. 90% of the game is mental. They have their hands raised. Now I tell you, how many of you are spending 90% of your time on the mental game? Not one hand is raised. So we say it's important. We agree. We all agree it's important, but no one's really spending a lot of time on it. So let's put some emphasis on the mental game. It doesn't have to be a lot, but if you practice, I tell the kids, do a little, a lot. Do a little, a lot. A little couple of things. Do them every day and you'll see a difference. So that's a little bit of what, you know, if a parent reaches out to me, I just follow up and say, let's meet for free. No obligation, just to see if your kid likes it and wants to do it. And they always say, yeah, this is great. We love it. Let's do it.
I was just going to say, is this something new? This type of mental performance coaching, is it new? Because I think in a lot of our audience may be thinking, you know, I've heard James talk about life coaching brings in those folks, but
yeah,
you're talking about inside of a school working with teams. This is kind of, for high schools? Is this a new concept?
It is new. In fact, I think I'm one of the, I've yet to find another mental performance coach hired by a high school. Think about it. The colleges all have them. They have mental performance coaches on staff. They have mental health counselors. They have sports psychologists. You look at any college program.
And that's not new. That's been around for decades.
That is not new. That's been around for decades. But think about it. The trickling down of high school sports is becoming like college, like
yeah,
varsity, a competitive varsity sport. it's an intense, you know, that's, it's probably what D3 was 25 years ago when I played
D3. That's a good point.
I bet you it's similar. It's all.
And you know, we're hearing in some school systems now that the NIL is starting to seep into high school.
I was about,
oh my gosh.
That was my next statement. NIL is also changing the game. So these kids need a mental performance coach on staff. You know, I became, I have a certification in mental performance coaching. I have, two master's degrees in counseling, but I also love, this has been a love of mine, James, since I'm in college. I took a sports psychology class 30 years ago, and I've been hooked ever since. I listen to podcasts every day. I read all the books. It's just a hobby of mine. So when I was coaching volleyball at my high school, and I was teaching my girls a lot of these mental tricks that I use in my race.
Yeah.
I was like, this is great. And they were eating it up, James. They were like, we love this, Coach Leah. This is great. I said, why isn't every kid in our high school getting to some access to this? And that's where the idea came to me. I pitched it to my superintendent at my school. And he said, Leah, I love it. Like, go for it. So that's how I got hired. And now my mission really is to promote it and have other high schools have someone on staff. Because James, I can go visit other high schools. And I've done that. I've spoken to the cheer team over here and the softball team over there. But you really need a program in your school. Like I can, you know, I'm happy to go speak to a team, but it really isn't getting reinforced if they're not seeing me. I walk around the halls of my high school. I talk to my kids all day long. I'll see a baseball player. Hey, when's your next game? Oh, we're playing so-and-so. Okay, cool. Are you pitching? No, I'm up. Great. And then I'll see a lacrosse player. What are you guys playing? Oh, we're playing this school. We're so nervous. All right. Remember what we talked about. Control the controllable. So I'm reinforcing these ideas on a daily basis. So I always tell school districts, sure, I can come speak, but you really want to, do you want an experience or do you want a transformation? Like, that's the key. So to answer your question, it is relatively new. And I don't know if there's other people doing it, contracted to do it, like kind of like I am. So that's part of my mission is part of my mission here on this podcast is getting the word out there. Have a high school district, employ someone in your building, whether it's a guidance counselor, a social worker, a coach, it could be anybody. It could be an English teacher. It doesn't matter. You have to have a love of sports and sports performance and a connection with the kids. The kids don't care what title you have if you care about them. It doesn't matter. People go, oh, I'm not certified to do that. Well, listen, I can help you. I'll help you get certified or I'll mentor you. You know, we have to be open-minded about who can do the work that I'm doing. You don't have to be a sports psychologist licensed by the state of New York to be helping the kids. They just need a passionate, positive role model in their life. More adults that are speaking about the types of things you and I are talking about and sharing with them is what's going to help. A long answer.
You know, no, actually, it spurred a lot of thoughts I had. And the first thing that I thought of is, do we not need this also outside of the athletic realm, inside the school as well? Because, again, going back to what we talked about to begin with, all teachers want to do these things. They just don't have the bandwidth in their day.
Right.
My daughter is in her second year teaching. She's teaching the same discipline that I did. And I listen to her, and I listen to what she has to do. And I'm like, I didn't have to do that. I wasn't involved with that. You got to go back when?
That's fine.
And I was I thought I did my job extremely well. I thought I was very good at what I did. And she's doing extremely well too, but she's having to do so many more almost peripheral things that I didn't even worry about. And a lot of it's having to deal with administrative type things, interacting with the front office more. I mean, this is the honest truth. I never interact with front office. I was told when I was hired, you know, as long as we don't have to come down and do any problems here and your kids do well in the class, you're on your own. Just do your job.
Yeah, we'll leave you alone. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll come in and evaluate you and tell you for our own. We'll give you a mentor that can help you. And the mentor is really a good help for me there in the classroom. But beyond that,
yeah.
I mean, but she's micromanaged by it. And they just don't have the time. So getting back to this, isn't this needed in more than just the athletic realm?
100%. And there are guidance counselors and social workers and school psychologists, but it's not, those typically tend to be in crisis situations, right? Mm-hmm. So those students who, if you are in crisis, yes, we are able to help you. And there's plenty of people on staff to do that. It's the proactive side that I wish we had more time to do. So I've come up with an idea to have like a student wellness center in my school, right? And out of that student wellness center, James, would be workshops on anxiety, test anxiety, how to overcome a difficult situation, how to deal with drama amongst friends, like all the things that are going on for these teenagers, and they're happening. But we're not able to access them. As a guidance counselor,
right.
I'm in my office as a guidance counselor. I am making sure they are meeting their graduation requirements. Their schedules are set up for next year. I'm processing college applications, letters of recommendation, and dealing with crisis or immediate need situations. How can I possibly have the time to go and do this layer of work, which is really proactive? It's teaching, it's instructing, like your daughter. How is she going to have time to touch upon these things if she's worried about, I have to get back to the front office and submit my lesson plan? I have, you know, they want to talk to me about this parent that called because they're upset. So the parents, what's pulling your daughter is the parental pressure comes down on the administration, right? Which goes to her. That's how it's, whereas 20 years ago, that parental pressure was not there. The parents weren't constantly calling the administration to find out, well, why did my daughter get an 80 and not 100? And why is this being taught? And they've been empowered because their anxiety as parents is so intense. That's what I'm realizing through all this that's different than 20 years ago. The anxiety from parents. Our world is crazy. Social media. So what do the parents do? They feel anxious about their kid. And how do they handle that? Everybody who's involved with my kid has to help me. Like, and what are you doing to help my kid? What are you doing to help my kid? This is what's happening, James. This is what's happening. As a coach, these coaches, the pressure they're under is tremendous. Phone calls from parents. Why isn't my kid playing? Why isn't this one playing? They have this voice now, and it's very dicey what's happening. And I'm just telling you, as an insider, this is what I'm seeing. And it concerns me because the message to the kid is, it's everybody else's fault and it's not mine.
And it's such a slippery slope that parents can go into. I mean, my oldest two were athletes in high school. And so many times my wife and I wanted to intervene.
Yep.
But because I'm in this world and was in the classroom in high school and she was a teacher in elementary, we restrained from doing that. And sometimes there was guilt that we failed as parents because we weren't doing it and everybody else was.
Yes.
You know, Johnny's parents are calling and Susie's parents are calling. Why aren't you calling? Or why aren't you intervening in it and stuff like that? And I'm like, well, I want to let them grow on their own, but
it's not appropriate.
You're right. It's a slippery slope that is going through there.
But we have to be careful with that. And parents don't recognize that they're doing their child a disservice when they intervene every opportunity they can. And it's not helping them. It's not helping them deal with the realities.
Well, I was going to say, so we've kind of gone over the why this is needed and really what it does. As a listener might be thinking, okay, I'm getting kind of interested in this, but I really want to know what's in it for my kid. What's the benefits? What are the outcomes that he is going to see? Are they all of a sudden going to be D1 college material?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are the outcomes? What are the things that they can, and what I've realized in working with training life coaches, youth life coaches, is that parents want something tangible that they can measure.
Yeah.
And this is not an area sometimes that we can measure very well.
No, it's not. And that's the difficulty in this. And you have to have some faith in the process of it. Like, you know, I met with a girl the other day and I got a message from her dad right away. She feels so much more confident already just talking to you. She was it's just like when you go into coaching or therapy or some situation where you're processing your thoughts and beliefs out loud. You are expressing them to another person who is then giving you feedback, right? A lot of these thoughts are in your head. And then I met with another kid last week. This was so interesting, James. The young boy was in eighth grade, a swimmer, and his mom sat next to him, right? And she was out of the screen, but she was with him. And I had this whole conversation with him. And he was talking about how nervous he gets. And he does it in the classroom as well. And he gets so worked up that he doubts himself. And he's really talented swimmer, but he just gets all these nerves. And afterwards, mom came back into the screen and she said, I've never heard him say that much about his sport. What's going on? I've never heard him speak out loud what he just shared with you in 20 minutes. Like, it was powerful for her to hear him share this. She's like, wow, I didn't know any of that was really going on. I just knew he was having a tough time. So to measure it is difficult. And that's why, you know, you don't have to buy a year with Coach Leah. Try 5 sessions with me. Have your child talk to me. And I hate to use the word guarantee, but it's going to help them feel they're in control. They have some power. It's an empowering process, which gives them, it's specific to them. It's not their teammates or their parents. It's about them. And that's a luxury, you know, to be able to talk to someone who gets what you're saying. So I try and promise, you know, increased confidence, some power and control over your own outcomes. Just having that mindset of just shift the mindset a little bit, like, hey, maybe go into it with, I had a girl the other day who said, I just dread practice. And I said, all right, what are your goals this week? Set 3 goals for the tournament coming up. I want to have more fun out there with my friends. I want to have a better attitude towards the game. And I wanted, it was something else. It was like, get all my serves over the net or something like that. So it's about, you set these little goals. I set goals with the kids, and then that's intentional, James. Now it's like, okay, this is my focus. I'm going to come to practice with a better attitude and energy. I'm going to have fun with my teammates. This is supposed to be fun, right? We tell them sports is fun. Remember that word?
And then it loses right when they start doing year round. It becomes less fun.
Yeah, it becomes less fun. And if we don't have fun out there, we're not going to be successful. But they're just not. I mean, you have to go to practice every day and say, this is so much fun. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. Do we dread it sometimes if it's cold and raining? And of course, you're human. But once you get moving and you see all your friends, it should be fun. That's why you're doing it. So that's a little bit of what a parent might get in return. I have, you know, testimonials, and you can look at my website and see lots of parents and kids who've written stuff about working with me. And again, if you're looking to, if something just seems off, your kid's not enjoying it like they used to, they're not performing at the level that you think they should, it's worth a try. It could be the answer, you know, it could help them get through a difficult time.
It's so needed as well. And I think a lot of parents tend to, because coaching, youth life coaching, is relatively a new concept, they gravitate towards therapy and a traditional counseling, which they don't understand. Counseling therapy is trying to deal with something maybe that's prohibiting them from moving forward. That's something where coaching is forward thinking.
Yes.
And we find out where you are right now and move you forward. The guy who write our coaching curriculum, he likes to go back and use the word coach from its origin, you know, that it was a mode of transportation, that it's actually a coach, like a stagecoach. He says, think of it as that visual. A stagecoach finds you where you are and takes you to where you're going to go. And he says, so that's your role as a coach. You figure out where they are, let's discover where they want to go, and then you help them get there.
That's great.
And if you see that visual, they can understand it a little bit more and have that concept of what's going on this.
That's great. I love that analogy. Yeah, that's perfect.
I really want to figure out how I can get, you know, pick your brain on how we could get more schools to do this. You know, let's come up with a plan.
I know.
I'm writing all these notes down. Like, and my big thing that I wrote here and kept circling and starring it was, we got to figure out how to get this into school systems. How that we can help them not only be athletic performance, which may be an easier sale for some school systems, but also, you know, someone who's just there as a life for them too.
I know. I think there's two avenues of this, right? There's two branches. There's the mental health piece, right? Because at the end of the day, it's also a mental health proactive. Like if a kid is struggling, if an athlete is struggling, let's think about it. Athletes are taught to be tough, strong. Asking for help is a weakness. Admitting defeat is a weakness. There's a stigma and a stereotype around an athlete that they're not supposed to ask for help and they're fine. And, you know, their parents come from the generation of rub some dirt on it and get back out there.
Yeah.
And there are times when that's necessary. But so I worry about the athletes that are stressed and overwhelmed and are struggling mentally. So there's that piece of it. And I always tell all the kids, come to me. If I will help you find help. If it's not me that can help you, I tell the other athletes, if you have a friend, tell me, come to me, and I can be that liaison between, you know, a psychologist or something, if a kid is really in a bad way and needs help. So I'm trying to break the stigma a little bit on that as well. And the other side is the mental performance, which a lot of school districts, I hate to say this, but superintendents, like, we need to hire someone to help them win. Like, that seems silly. Like, college level is different. You can get away with that more because winning is money, right?
Right.
Winning is money. So whereas in a high school, winning is not money. It doesn't matter how much we win, we don't get funding. So that's why the mental health side of what I do, that's why I call myself a mental health and performance coach, because I'm also teaching them balancing school and life, self-care, make sure they get enough sleep and eating the right things and taking care of themselves. If things are going wrong, if they're not sleeping and they're not happy, let's talk about it. So I think that's almost a better way to get someone like me into a school district, because let's be honest, the money is an obstacle in a public school. Yeah. Maybe not a private school, but a public school is going to say.
But even so, you know, high schools that do well in athletes, their athletic budget, it will increase just because revenue increases, gate tickets increases, that kind of incidental stuff increases. I interviewed a couple of years ago, Dr. Nate Hearn, who was one of the coaches for Odessa Perman, the high school that Friday Night Lights was on. He was actually one of the coaches that was on the real team. And, you know, he talked about the fact that, you know, they had the time to pour into them. And
yeah.
And when we got through with the interview, he suggested that I interview two of his former players that were on the team that the movie was made about. And so we interviewed him. We interviewed them together. It was a great interview. And they talked less about what they did in practice and more what the men did to them outside of practice, how they led them, how they taught them, how they mentored them, how they taught them to be, you know, look beyond themselves. I mean, one kid he came into high school as a 135-pound freshman, and he graduated still less than 180 pounds, but he was an all-state in the state of Texas, an all-state center. At less than 180 pounds.
How?
Come on. That's a mental thing right there, because you're running up against guys who are 300 pounds, 225, and yet he was doing it. So they're teaching him, you know, some of that stuff. So,
oh, it's definitely the game changer in all of it. Like, if you want your players to perform and your teams to perform, I tell them all the time, it's a mental game. If you go into a game, a meet, a contest, whatever, what have you, and you think you're going to lose, you're definitely going to.
I bet you anything, if we could do a study on programs that are perennially successful,
yes,
you're going to find that at least the leadership coaches, the coaches that are head coaches over that particular sport, they are doing this. They are finding it's just as important. Where those teams that are randomly successful, you know, they'll have a year where they're successful and then they fall back down to the middle of the pack, and then 3 or 5 years later, that's dependent on who's filtered through the system.
Correct. That's a little bit of luck and a little bit of timing, right? You had a couple of good players come through. You had a standout or a superstar come through. You win once. It's the programs that tend to win year in and year out. They're doing something right. I can look at a bench and tell you right away whether that team is going to win or not. I can tell right away. I can tell by the energy of the kids on the bench. I can tell by the attitudes when they come off the field. I can tell you right away. I'll be like, if you have 500% of your bench engaged and positive, you've got about a 500 record. The record can be determined by the attitude of the bench and the outcome.
Oh.
I'm telling you, because it's about negative thoughts. It's about behavior. It's about mindset. It's about culture. It's about culture. It's culture that wins. I tell every team I meet with, if you think talent wins, talent alone will not win. It might get you far, but it won't win.
I coached middle school and high school baseball for a while, and I used to tell the team, very similar to this, I can look at a team pregame, how they're warming up, how they're interacting with each other on warmups, non-directed by the coach, how they are doing this, and I can tell you whether or not we can beat this team or else it's going to be a battle. Because there's sometimes I looked at the other team and I told one of the assistant coaches, I was like, even on our worst day, we're going to beat these kids because look at them. They don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're all over the place.
They're not together. They're not, their warm-ups aren't intentional. They're not, you know, and again, sometimes, but then I say the other thing, if you see a team that's all lined up and they're in unison and they're intimidating, but that doesn't mean you can't beat them. Just because they're doing all those things, it's the other way around. You can still beat them because it's not the best team that wins. It's the team that plays the best on that day.
Right now, during the NCAA tournament, when we're recording this right before the Final Four, it's a great story. I mean, my alma mater, NC State.
Oh, that's awesome.
Is in the Final Four. This is a team that won, that if they had lost in the first or second round of the ACC tournament, most likely that coach was fired.
Yep.
And they already had one player before the ACC tournament who said, I'm done with this team. I'm going into the portal. and said, I'm not traveling with you guys at all. And now they've won 9 straight, and they're, you know, going to the Final Four and have the energy and the impact. And when you were talking about pleasure, you know, their best player, big DJ Burns, he keeps saying, you know, as long as I'm having fun, I'm going to be playing. He's out there dancing and doing all his stuff while he's playing. Yeah,
he's having fun.
That's a study on a mental aspect, because athletically wise, they're no better now, athletes, and skill wise, than they were a month ago.
No.
And a month ago, they were maybe not even going to make the NIT.
They were close, yeah.
And now, I mean, they definitely weren't going to make the NCAA. They weren't even bubble. They couldn't see a bubble at all. And now they're at top 4. And, you know, a lot of folks are saying, this is the team that's probably going to take it to, you know, to the finals, at least challenge Connecticut. So
they do. That'd be
and
great. It's all this, because it's belief. It really is. It has to be about belief. If you believe, you can do it. And they've got momentum now. They've got proof, right? Okay, guys, we've done it. Physically, it's doable. Now it's up here. It's up to this.
And the women are also in the Final Four. And it's the same thing. They were unranked at the beginning of the year, came all the way up and were as high as number 3 in the nation, and now they're top 4.
It's crazy.
And, you know, they're also, it's a kind of a mental thing, and they both have this attitude. Why not us? Why not us?
Why not? Why not us? Yeah. Why not? Somebody's got to win. But it's
exactly right.
Interesting. It's a really interesting time. It's cool, though. Good for them. I'm excited for them. I'm rooting for NC State. UConn, I know.
Good.
Everybody up here is all, you know, UConn. I'm in New York. But I, you know, they won it already. Like, let's have somebody else win it. I'm an underdog. I'm always fighting for the underdog, for sure.
Well, they're going to be the underdog. They've been the underdog since the second game of the ACC tournament. So
I love a little Cinderella story where the underdog comes up and wins. And then everybody's going to want to know, what did you do? What's your secret? And I can't wait to see the interviews. I'm watching a lot of them now. It's really
the 30 for 30 special that ESPN will do in a few years if they win it all.
Exactly. They're going to do that. And they're going to see all these things. But what kids don't realize, what parents don't realize, it's not how many hours you're putting in and extra training. It's belief in what you do. It's having fun. It's treating you being coachable, listening. You know what I mean? Like the stuff that makes believing in your coach and allowing, you know, these kids that question, now they don't know what they're doing. And the what drives me crazy is when parents, you know, tell their kid, oh, that coach doesn't know what they're doing, or why aren't they playing you? And they're playing, you know, you're undermining that. Every time you say that as a parent, now the kid is looking at his coach like, does he know what he's doing? And that doubt right there, you're creating a wedge between your child. Let the coach coach. Let the coach coach. Let it happen. If your child is that good and that much of a standout, it'll happen for them. You know, we have to, as I'm doing a lot of work with parents. In fact, I just created a new newsletter called The Car Ride Home, and I'm trying to teach.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on my website. If you go to my website, you can sign up for it. I'm really just trying to help parents navigate this, their kids' athletic journey, in a way that they could be the hero of their kids' athletic journey, and not the, oh no, I got to get in the car with my mom and she's going to talk about what I did wrong and what we should do next time and why the coach is an idiot and why is this one playing more than me? She's not as good as you. And the kids don't want to hear that, James. They know what they did wrong. They're disappointed. They want you to say, hey, what can I do to support you? And let's get them next time. And here's the things I saw that you did well. Let's praise the effort, not the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Praise the effort. The effort is what matters, because when this is all said and done, your kid's going to go to college and your kid's going to have a job. And it's about what the effort they put in, day out, not the outcome. They have to learn how to deal with the outcome when it doesn't go their way. And I think that if I can help parents have a little bit better language around that and have a better communication, think about it. Parents have so much they want to teach their kids. You do as a coach and an athlete. I do as a coach and athlete. But if we don't set the stage for those conversations, they're not going to have an impact. The impact we want to have on our kids. They're not going to listen to us if they think every time we talk to them, it's critical, or it's where we can't make fun of their teammates. Like I've heard parents say, why is she playing more than you? She shouldn't be playing more than you. She's not as good as you are. It's like, that's my friend you're talking about. Like, I don't think that's appropriate. So, but you'd be surprised what I hear in the stands, James. I've got kids in every sport and I hear it all, and I just shake my head. And I just think if parents had a little bit of coaching, right? Some parent coaching, another coaching, just on how to have those hard conversations, you know, the car ride home, they get in the car and you're like, the kid's going, oh no, what are they going to say to me? It's important to have the right language around that. So that's just another thing I'm doing to help parents.
So how can our audience get in touch with you and connect with you so they can learn more about this and get on this email list as well?
Definitely the newsletter. I'm not emailing you every day. I probably do it once every couple of weeks. I just sent one out today. Go to my website, leahjansen.com, and you can sign up for the newsletter and I have a free checklist, 10 ways you can be a better sports parent in 2024. Just again, a couple of tips. If you take one of those and make an improvement on it, and just when your kid gets in the car, just say, hey, where do you want to eat? Like, that's the only question you should be asking. What do you want to go get? What do you want to go have eat? Like, let's go to Chick-fil-A. Let's do something. And just have it be, then they won't be so nervous about talking. And then let them come to you. So that's, you know, those tips I share on the checklist is just some ways you can improve your relationship with your kid, which, listen, we only have them for a short period of time. And sports are important to them. It's important to us. We're all on the same page, but we want to be able to impact our kid in a way that's positive and loving and supportive. And we have to be careful with our language sometimes. So join me on my website. I'm also on Instagram at Leah Jansen as well. Easy to find. And again, just sharing content that's helpful and hopefully you can support your kid.
And audience, all those links are going to be in the show notes. So if you're listening to this, just go to your podcast app and you'll see those direct links. If you're watching this on YouTube, you know the drill. Just look straight down, hit more, and you'll see the list there. Leah, thank you for joining us today. And thank you for spurring a lot of thought in me about how to promote this in the two areas that I'm connected here in school systems as well. And be able to connect. So thank you for your time today.
You're welcome, James. It's been a pleasure to be here with you. I appreciate you having me on, and it's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
And thank you, audience, for sticking with us. Listen, if you're hearing this now, that means you found some value in this conversation. And so please like and comment on this, but most importantly, share it, because someone you know needs to hear this message and can help them. And we'll see you again very soon on another episode of the Generation Youth Podcast.
And there you have it, another impactful episode of the Generation Youth Podcast. To all of our listeners out there, remember to hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform so you can never miss an episode. Want to be a part of the Generation Youth community? Follow us on all of our social media platforms. We'll keep you connected with all of our upcoming episodes and inspiring initiatives. You're not just a listener here. You're a catalyst for change. Together, we're building a future filled with promise, potential, and endless possibilities. This journey is just starting, so keep tuning in, keep growing, and let's continue uplifting our youth one episode at a time. Thank you for joining us today, and until next time, let's keep sparking inspiration and igniting the future.